Welcome, everybody. We're going to get started since we've got quite a few people live on the web. What I discovered, I asked Gary, that's set just right where it needs to be. Yeah, that's good. What I found out is there's a lot of people all of a sudden from Switzerland and South Africa that are listening now. And I know some of them are Gary's people, because I've seen them on your Facebook. But there's 50 or 60 of them going in. So that's good. So the last time that we were with you in January, we talked about some issues about what we believe in and we're going to try to focus in on the language of the kingdom. Now, I hope that doesn't confuse you, but I think when we get to the end, we'll have some more understanding of it. But tonight, I want to focus in on the title for tonight, and I've called it The Fear of Unbelief. And we've spoken a lot of words that we say are true, and we've heard a lot of words that we say are true, but there is a word that has escaped us that we don't know. And Jesus said, the truth will set you free. And some of the confusion comes in because the word cannot come from our history or from an experience we've had in the past. Because it has to be just as true today as it always has been. And it cannot be conditional or affected in any way by the appearances or a circumstance that's taken place in your life. Now, why do I say that? The language of the kingdom begins by finding out what it's not. And when I say we speak all these words, we say we know truth, we say we've understood truth, we say we've heard truth, but then in our experiences and in the circumstances, out from our mouth continually comes unbelief. And if we don't focus in and identify those things, we're not going to really believe this word. And so, what are they? And these things are painful. I'm going to read you an email when we get done tonight that shows a living experience of someone other than me that was on a trip, and it was unbelievable because what I heard back from her, and this is what excites me, is what I heard back from her. It's Liz Den Hartog. She sends me these emails all the time. And what I heard back from her was the truth that I shared in her own tongue in a different way, which is so beautiful because it ministers to me and helps my unbelief because I hear it with a different twist. So some of the things we're talking about are going to seem redundant, but it's because we're still struggling with identifying these things. And here's why we need to just scratch the surface of it, because there's legions of them. There's not just one thing. There's legions of them. And as we talked last time in January, we're not really listening to what we say and how we're contradicting what we say is true. So what good does it do to speak truth if you don't really understand it in a way where it changes you from the inside? How's that going to help you? It doesn't help you at all. And we've been doing that for generations. We can stand up and quote verses, verse after verse after verse, and there's a lot of truth in them, but I like to examine each word in them because there's so much depth in them. And sometimes you look at a verse and you could spend an hour just on the one verse when you're hearing what the Spirit is saying about it. What does death mean? What does life mean? And what's the difference between the two? And all through Scripture, we found that the difference is the difference between flesh and spirit. They're really synonymous with each other. So life and death, flesh and spirit, or in this case, spirit and flesh, if I'm going to line them up on top of each other. And so where does the language of the kingdom begin? Well, it has to begin with identifying the unbelief. That's where it has to begin, or it doesn't do you any good. It isn't going to help you at all. You can stand up and recite all you want. And so, so I say the language of the kingdom, but we're going to spend tonight talking about, beginning to talk about, what it's not, before we can understand this word. Now, it began in Genesis, and it's quoted all, Jesus said it all through Scripture. And he said to Adam, "Why are you afraid?" And he said to all those that were following him, Jesus said to all those that are following him, "O ye of little faith." They're the same statement. There's no difference in that statement. Why are ye afraid, O ye of little faith? Why? What doth hinder you? And we spend a lot of time talking about what hinders us. And what hinders us is we don't have the spiritual understanding to understand when we speak words that have death in them. They have death in them. And we don't want to admit that to ourselves because then we feel judged. But why did Jesus say all these things to the people that were very, very insulting? Why did he say in one thing, "If you believe me and you drink from this, you'll have eternal life," and he turned around a few verses later and said, "Let the dead bury the dead"? Very confusing if we don't really understand what he was talking about. And so there's a theme. And the theme is, all of these statements were spoken to expose unbelief in our lives. If we're honest with ourselves, this is where it has to begin. We wake up to the same fears again and again every morning. They're waiting for us. They're waiting for our minds to process them. We chew on it. And we somehow we're trying to find truth in there. And there's just no truth at all because it's so polluted, it can't get out. And so they might have a different twist or be related to a different set of appearances, but they're still holding us down in unbelief. So the fear of unbelief. I really believe some are starting to hear, but then come the questions. But what about this? Or what about that? Or why is this happening? Now, I'm not immune from these things. I'm just telling you. I'm not, just because I'm sitting here sharing this with you, absolutely means the opposite, that I would be immune from these things. Because I'm just telling you, I've given my testimony a lot about it, and I'm not going to get into that tonight at all, because I just want to speak the truth to you about it. But if anybody says they're immune from these things and they understand it all, I need to sit down and I need you to come up here and tell me. Because there's times I'm crying out and I don't know what to do. And the Father keeps saying to me all the time, "Mike, your problem is your judgment. Your problem is your judgment." He keeps saying to me over and over. So I don't look at what I'm judging. I'm saying, why am I judging it? Behind that is unbelief. And that's why we get confused and we get held down and we're in bondage, because there's a fear of unbelief. One, we don't know who we are. We don't really understand who we are, and there's confusion there. So there's some that are more trapped in unbelief because we believe in a God that's a respecter of persons. And we really do, if we're honest with each other, we believe if things go well on the level of the appearances, we've had a good day, or God's healed them or delivered them from some dreadful thing on a material plane, that has something to do with spiritual blessing. And I'm here to tell you, it's just the opposite. It said, Jesus learned obedience by that which he suffered. So if you're just trying to escape suffering, you're not going to get anywhere. If that's all you're trying to do is pray to a God who's unknown to you to escape a problem, you're never, ever going to understand truth. Because you'll stay, it's like Lanyon says, from pillar to post. You go from one circumstance to the next circumstance, never living in victory because you always want an answer to your problem. And it's very subjective. It's very specific usually. I want this. Why can't I have it? And all through Scripture, we read verses and we misinterpret them. Even with Job, we'll misinterpret it, where it said after he'd went through all that he'd been through, that more and more was returned unto him. And I'm telling you right now, it had nothing to do with the physical. The only time more can be returned to you is when you realize that it's the spiritual that has permanent value. It can never be physical. So now, I can't say I'm real excited about running to the flames, you know, of trouble. But I know that the more torrential it becomes, the more I hear. And I'm learning to be obedient to that, not to try to behave better, because I see that at times getting pretty crazy. If you watch my behavior, if I listen to my tongue, I say to myself, while I'm doing it sometimes, Nevins, what are you doing? What the hell's wrong with you? And I stop. Now, it's like the two little guys in the movies, you know, the one little angel and the bad angel, you know. And the thing is the bad angel always wants relief. He's always looking for relief. And you then develop a personal God that isn't any more alive than the man on the moon. He's personal what? To your issue. And so God said, why are you praying to gods that cannot save you? It's because you don't know me. He said it in Isaiah. It's because you have no idea who I am. And so, there's a word that produces what I call true health, which is purely spiritual. Purely spiritual. Has nothing to do with the appearances. So Jesus told us, judge not by appearances, but judge righteous judgment. And we can't understand righteous judgment, as we shared last time, because we're stuck on the appearances. Always trying to change something on the level of the appearances. So, a word that produces something that's purely spiritual is a spiritual state of peace that is what? It has to be unconditional to the appearances. Pure truth is unconditional to the appearances. And so this key can be stuck in any lock. And this is the keys Jesus was talking about when he says, I have the keys of hell and destruction. I have the keys. This is where life lives. Life is dwelling just beyond all the unbelief you're experiencing every day. Now, if you're listening to my voice right now and you say I'm not experiencing unbelief, then you're in double jeopardy. Okay, I'm just telling you right now, you're really deep in the doo-doo. Okay? Because this plane, this material world, is continually teaching you the difference between good and evil. All the time. And it's trapping us beyond a realm of good and evil. It's trapping us in a realm of unbelief. So I want to go in and help us expose these areas to try to give us a clue so that we ourselves can question ourselves when there's frustration or anxiety or fear. What is it that's bothering me? What am I really afraid of? And there's many, many things. So, what are you afraid of? What is fear? Where does it hide? And probably the biggest thing that we've talked about quite a bit is it's really one of the deepest rooted ones, because it's the one Jesus said that he had the final victory over. He said it's the fear of death. And it's hidden behind an illusion. It's couched and surrounded by appearances. And so where is this fear hiding? Now, Martha sent me a quick little blurb on the chat last January and said, Mike, it was wonderful, because I had just learned a few days before we set to listen to the teaching in January. We talked about the fear of death quite a bit. We just started scratching at the surface of it. And she said, death in the Aramaic means to be present somewhere else. So this is the definition of death. It has nothing to do with anything happening to you physically. Wow. Nothing at all. Nothing at all to any kind of physical manifestation. How could Jesus come and say to you, if you believe what I say to you, you'll have eternal life, and he meant it when he said it, and we run around afraid we're going to die all the time. And out of this fear of death comes a multitude of things. To be present somewhere else. Well, you can't be anywhere except where you are. Right? We've learned in the past that there's no such thing as time. Einstein said it. Einstein said one of the most spiritual statements ever said ever that I've ever heard in my life. That there's no such thing as passing time. That the distinction between the past, present, and future does not exist. The distinction. There's no separation there. Now, what does that say? Life's eternal. That's what it's telling you. It has no beginning, it has no end. And so he said, fear not, for I am with thee. This state where there's no fear. Fear not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. Be not dismayed. By what? Be not in your own understanding. That's what dismayed means. Believe not in your own understanding about what life is and about what death is. This is the heart of most of our difficulties. And so I want to keep talking about it because I'm still experiencing it in my own life. And I say, Father, teach me. I don't want to be afraid of death. How can I share with you how to not be afraid of death when I struggle with it? So as he's teaching me, I'm sharing with you what I'm learning every day. When I go in and deal with all these people that are all living in fear and try to be a comfort to them in some way. And my biggest fear isn't so much for myself and Diane. It's my fear that I can't be the supply to these people that work for me, these 50 families that have jobs for me. Now, I have to say to myself every day, I'm not their supply. I have to. But I still struggle with it every day. Yeah. I still go in and I look at the balance sheet and I listen to the bank and I talk to the finance guys and I talk to the commercial department, see what sales are coming. And when they dip a little bit, you know, I have to run out and have a drink. Gary, what's wrong with me?
You're bad.
I'm bad. Now, I'm not doing it as much. I've been doing pretty good lately. But that doesn't mean I don't want to. Matter of fact, my guys come up to me last week because I was on this diet and I was drinking caffeinated coffee all day to try not to eat. I was wired. They said, Mike, you need to go. I liked you better when you had drinks. I said, you're wired, man. You got to calm down. They were walking me around the track, you know. And I was right to the end of the thing, and it was getting tough right at the last 2 days, you know, of this program I was on. And I mean, I wanted to eat a cow. And so I was drinking coffee. And I never drink caffeinated coffee, but I had like 4 big cups a day. And it worked real good for my appetite, but I was like a crazed maniac.
He cleaned my kitchen.
I was cleaning the kitchen every night, and I never do that. because I couldn't sit still. So Kathy sent me something after our January meetings. I just love this woman. She's so insightful. I've invited her to come over, you know, in August for the seminars, and I'm sure Gary will be here if he's still on this side of the hemisphere, wherever you end up. But we want you to be here, brother. And I don't think she's going to be able to come because she's got 8 grandchildren and her husband retired. So she's pretty busy. Kathy wrote, I just want to read a little bit of what she said because it's, again, she's saying it to me in her own tongue and it's helping me deal with the fear of death. It's really helping me. And she says, Dear Mike, after listening to the seminar, I just want to encourage you. Well, everybody likes encouragement, don't we? But I don't want to be encouraged by unbelief. Okay, that doesn't encourage me. I got enough of my own. When truth is spoken and you tell people who they are, it delivers them from the fear of death. It delivers them from the whore that draws you other than to your true self within. And from that process, and from that processing things in the wrong. Now, they're Australians. They speak a little different than we do, so I got to look at it again real quick, right? I love it, but... Now, this is what she said that I highlighted. It was so profound. Said, you are right. As man, we have no idea, we have no confidence that we are eternal. We have no confidence that we are eternal. And we have judged ourselves by our own unbelief. Now, when unbelief is controlling you, and you believe it's real, it's pretty hard to see it. That's a hard thing to get around. Because you're defending it. And when you hear things that shock you and offend you, and all these questions come out, you want to know what? I get excited because I know I'm unearthing things that aren't true. And I've said, Father, teach me your ways. I don't care how much it hurts me. I want this on earth because I want to have a peace that's different. And so in Hebrews it said, For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death. Now again, you're going to think this is something to do with hanging on a cross and dying physically, and I'm telling you, it has nothing to do with that at all. He lived in death for 33 years. He lived in a death realm. He struggled with unbelief just like we do. He was tormented by his own flesh. And when the picture went out and he said, I was 40 days in the wilderness, tempted by the devil. Well, guess who he was struggling with? His own unbelief. There wasn't somebody there with a pitchfork barking at him. It was his own mind. He was struggling for 40 days. Now you see 40 all over Scripture, right? Well, I'm just glad I'm not an Egyptian because it took them 40 years and they still all died in what? Their unbelief. Because they believed in death. Hello? They died because they believed in it. And so last time I was with you, if you believe you're going to die, you will. You'll suffer and die. And all of them did except 1.5 people. Made it in the promised land, remember? 1.5. Joshua was the only one and he had to drag Aaron. Aaron didn't want to go. I think I got that right. Caleb, I'm sorry. Caleb was the only one. He had to drag Joshua, excuse me. I think Aaron was hovering around there somewhere, but it's why Moses had to be buried, hid away from the people, because they worshipped him just like they did Jesus, the healer. Jesus, the healer. The healer. He's gone. He's dead. There is no more Jesus, the healer. If that's what he came to do, then he'd still be here. That's not why he came. So he said, and through death, that he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. Now, what did he destroy in 40 days? His own unbelief. There's a theme here. He destroyed his own unbelief. He said, you're coming to me and you have nothing in me. I'm no longer wrestling with unbelief anymore. So unbelief, the power of death, that is the devil. Now the devil is your consciousness. The devil is your consciousness. The devil is you when Jesus spoke to you, when you started accusing your brother, and he said, you worship your father, the devil. Your own mind of judgment, of unbelief. You're worshiping that. That's your problem. He said, how will you escape hell? He didn't say you're going there. He said, you're already there. How will you escape? So being delivered from our mind of unbelief, which produces the fear of death, that we still have to admit that we're still at some level of bondage there. Or we'd have no fear of anything that came to us. We'd have no fear. We would know nothing can touch that which is true, that which is reality, that which is eternal. Eternal. Eternal life. Hello? So, I love what Kathy was saying. But Jesus said something else. He said, I've come that you might have life. What? What is life? Well, you know disease, don't you? We know all about disease. You know health. And those are both two things of human thought. All your life you've lived in the fear of death. And so then all those things, because of unbelief in life, right? Because we really don't believe and know who we are. We live in the fear of death. And so all those things, disease, health, poverty, wealth, trap us. And they're hidden behind the unbelief that you are eternal. Now, why would Jesus come and say to you, if you believe these words that I say to you, you will never die? Because we don't believe the words he said. Hello? I think that's called unbelief. I think. Hello. Yeah. Hello. Come in. That's called unbelief. Right? So we're here to talk about unbelief. We look back. We talk about events in our lives. I remember vacation Bible school. Tormenting experience for me. Because, I mean, every time I went, every summer, I walked the aisle. Because I was afraid I was going to go to hell. So I just did it. I said, well, I don't know what I'm doing, but it sounds like I better do it. So I raised my hand, I walked the aisle time after time again, and then where I was raised, where they said you could fart and lose it, so I had to keep going up, you know? Whatever it was, if I didn't do something quite right, it could be gone in an instant. And I didn't behave good as a boy. So my mom said all the time, you're going to hell for this, you're going to hell if you smoke, you don't clean your room, and well, it was good for me. Because I quit believing her pretty quick. It didn't take too long, okay? Because I was a wild man. So I knew that was all hogwash when I was a young kid. So we've got these experiences we've had. We say we met God in them. I'm telling you, you didn't. I'm just telling you right now, you didn't meet the true God. You went from an evil God to a good God. That's what you did. That's what happened. And we just went from eating from the bad side of the wrong tree to the good side of the wrong tree when we became religious, okay? Yep. So you had an experience, you just became religious then. That's all that happened. You just got religion. So we look at these experiences and people come up and, Mike, you know, this happened to me and I was here and this all happened. And you tell me that wasn't real? I said, well, you're the one questioning it. I don't know. What did you learn from it? You know, I want to know what you learned. I don't want to hear about your experience. Experiences are fine if we learn things through them. when we're stuck in these things, we still believe in a God of reward and punishment. And so we'll sit in religious meetings and listen to prayer requests of the unbelieving. Hello? While you remain in your unbelief. Wanting to pray to a personal God to what? Change the appearances. Change the appearances. There is no such being that hears those prayers. No such being. It's all an illusion. It's all based on your problem, which is surrounded by unbelief. So how do we find out about what this is? What is the thing that you fear? Where does it come from? You've got to ask yourself these things. Don't say you got it figured out. Don't anybody comes to me telling me I got it figured out, I'm just going to shut up and listen. I don't want to just hear that. Because I'm telling you right now, I ain't got it all figured out. I'm learning every day. I'm learning how to be more at rest and more at peace. Matter of fact, I'm getting thrown into it. Or I could not function with where I'm at today. So what's the thing that you fear? Where does it come from? Well, first of all, it doesn't exist until you accept it. Whatever you are afraid of controls you, and you become a conduit of that thing which you fear. You give invitation to that which you fear. You magnify it, you sustain it, and you feed it by what? Your human thought. That's all that ever keeps any fear alive, is human thought. The moment the thought is taken off of it, what does it do? It disappears. Now, this is the definition of evil and wickedness. Those are nasty words again, I'm sorry. But evil is a spirit of unbelief. It has nothing to do with behavior. Behaviors are just side effects. If you're trying to fix your behavior, you're frustrated. You're taking Prozac and all kinds of stuff. Right? Or a shot of whiskey. Whatever it is, we cry, we carry on. Why is this happening? This person, who's this person? What'd they do to me? The moment the thought is taken off of it, disappears. So this is why Jesus, take no thought for your definition of life. What's your definition of life? Easy going. Cruising down Highway 66 with perfect weather. Never run out of gas. Never need to stop for a fuel pit stop. End up on a beach with a Corona and a nice lady next to you. Or whatever it is. So, this fear has nothing to support it. It completely lives on human thought. So the thing you fear has come upon you. It's quite natural because it's the only, it's quite natural because you are the only one that gives it any life. You're the only one that gives it any traction. And this is why it's called the spinning and the turmoil and the frustration and the anxiety. There's never going to be relief there. There'll never be relief there if you're stuck in that spot. It's very, very subjective. And that's why I believe that something we're going to talk about tomorrow, and I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit. I said when we were together in January, I don't believe in God. And I'm going to tell you why tomorrow, and it's going to really surprise you. And Gary and I have talked about it, and we had a little powwow talking about it. So here's something that helps you with that. The person sitting next to you does not fear the same thing you do. It's very subjective. Why am I not afraid of the same disease I see other people have? Why not? But there you stand at the end of your road, holding on to your fear. But if once you realize that the moment you abandon the business, it's a business of taking thought, it's a religious business of taking thought, that it will disappear. The power of recognition only comes to a point in your life where it will deliver you when you see what a liar that you've been. That's hard to hear, isn't it? The mind of man is desperately wicked. From its mouth comes forth life and death. Now, you're never going to die. I can tell you that. But if you're speaking lies all the time, you'll never enjoy it. I can tell you're never going to die, but if you don't believe it, it doesn't help you one bit. That's why I said at the beginning, we can speak words, and they don't mean anything. They have to become alive. And when we get to the end of these things, we find out how simple it is. And I can give you great examples of when fear disappeared in my life. Just by releasing our neighbors from the judgment that we had of them. We got into minor skirmishes and some turmoil because they don't like us. Well, how could they not like us? I mean, Diane, how could they not like Diane? I mean, geez. And what, you know what we did? It got to its like peak. I'm not going to go into it again. It's in the recordings, okay? We don't have time to go into it again. But we set out there and I said, Diane, let's just let them have their own way. And the moment we said that together and held hands, all of it vanished. All of it. Months and months of hell. Gone. That quick. Just poof. Gone that quick. Isn't that something? So what was sustaining it all was our judgment and our thoughts towards these people, which are just as holy and just as righteous as anyone else. Righteous judgment. You'll never find it until you realize all the areas where you're judging life the wrong way. That's how you're going to understand righteous judgment, and we dealt with that extensively in January. So, we have to see what a liar we've been. Now, how does that fit into non-judgment? Yikes. You say you believe in the indwelling Christ, yet you're living in unbelief. Out from your mouth comes forth lies. What's the lie? It's the opposite of what you are. That's all it is. Get off the details. It's all couched in one simple thing, and it's unbelief. That's where it all comes from. If you can find your way back to that and start to deal with that, Mike, why are you afraid that the bank account is going to get down to zero and you're going to have to lay everybody off? Why are you afraid of that? Why? That's a big one for me. There's a lot of zeros on the end of it right now. It was real easy back when we were just doing this much, right? Now it's this big. And it's still hard for me. It still affects me. As I get back and withdraw my judgment more and more, I see that the path is becoming much clearer and straighter and sustainable the more I get my eyes off of it. The more I get my eyes off of it, what seemed crooked looks straight. So, here in Revelation, another beautiful, beautiful passage. And John said, and when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. Now I'm going to add a couple words in there just to magnify that. When I really saw him, that eternal life that dwells within you, when I really saw him within myself, I fell at his feet as dead. What did he give up? All of his unbelief. He realized he was getting nowhere fast and it wasn't working. And he gave up on himself. I fell at my feet as dead. And he laid his right hand of understanding upon me. Now I added another word in there. The right hand means an understanding of truth. He laid his right hand of understanding upon me, saying unto me, fear not, I'm the first and the last. Would you like to quit scrambling around in between the first and the last and enjoy some life? I'm all there is. It's just me, and I am your life. So fear not, I'm the first and the last. I am he that liveth by what? A right understanding, and was dead in my own unbelief. Now, nobody's ever going to say or admit in any religious meeting that Jesus ever lived in unbelief, and they're lying. It said he was like his brother in every respect. He struggled with everything you're struggling with. Everything. How could he ever be our leader and our deliverer if he didn't go through hell like we're going through? Now, the question is, how long do you want to live there? That's the question. Because there's no life there. There is no life in that realm. I am he that liveth and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. Now, in this understanding, I'm going to share with you the keys of hell and of death. Now, we've already given you that answer, what that is. It's a peace that's unconditional to the appearances. Unconditional. It fits in every lock, it fits in every door, and it's always the same. Now, the hard part about it is wading through all your unbelief to get to that point. That's what's hard. When we fall dead at the feet of our own understanding and begin to really see him within yourself, we find then that, here's the key, a real key that's going to help you. It is the desire for your answer to that thing which you fear that holds you in bondage. You want an answer to your problem. And we're very specific. I spent hours on my knees in Baptist meetings praying for nothing. They were long, right? Well, when I got up, I felt better emotionally. You know, and some things appeared like they worked and some didn't. Well, you just need to pray harder and you need to show up Wednesday to visitation and put more money in the offering plate and all that stuff, right? Well, I gave up on all that. I realized it wasn't working. And I don't want to get into more stories. But let's say that again, because we really need to hear that, right? When we fall dead at the feet of our own understanding, we begin to really see him who is life eternal within you. But when we find that it is the desire for the answer to that thing which you fear, that's what's holding you in bondage. That's the key that's holding you in bondage. That desire for an answer to your problem, to your circumstances, to your difficulties. When the desire is gone, when the thought is gone for the thing you want, it goes up in a puff of smoke. We realize it was never real. How could it go up in a puff of smoke if it was real? The only thing that's real is eternal. So if it can come and go, it ain't real, guys. It ain't a duck. Now, it quacks like a duck. It might sound like a whole flock of them at times, right? But reality is something that never changes. The Changeless Kingdom was the title of our whole retreat in August. It was beautiful. Go back and listen to them. Why is the kingdom changeless? Because we find out the kingdom is God Himself. And Jesus just told us that here in this verse. I died as you. That's why it said He became sin. He struggled with His own unbelief. Struggled with it, just like we do. And came out of it and said, now, you can live forevermore if you follow my teaching. Follow my teaching of this. I am the way, I'm the way out. What is it? It's hard for us to raise our hands and say that we dwell in unbelief, but I'm telling you right now, it's your key to victory. Don't tell me. I don't want to hear about it. I got my own list. I really don't. Just go get alone and say, Father, why am I afraid? And then what's behind that, right? What is behind it? Unbelief is behind it. That you don't really know who you are. You really don't know that you can never die. And that's what Kathy said. That's what she said. We have no value as a man. We have no understanding as a man that we're eternal. Well, one of the problems is you believe you're a man. Every man that walks the face of the earth believes he's going to die. And so this is why John said, no man will ever see God inside himself. As long as you believe you're a man, you believe you're separate from that thing in you that's eternal. There's no such thing. Never has been. Never has been true. It's the first thing that happened to Adam. He believed he was a man. He said, Liz, or Eve's hot. Let's go out and have some crazy sex out in the bushes. Right? Off he went. What was the first thing that happened? He found himself in fear. Now that stuff can be fun, but it fades away though. Just telling you, it don't last forever either. So then what are you going to do? Nothing wrong with it. Well, I got to save this one for the third lesson because I just about slipped into it, but I'm not going to go there. Okay. So in Romans 4, to be carnally minded is death. Here our carnal mind, which we've been taught, is debauchery. It's not true at all. The carnal mind is the mind that's dwelling in unbelief. It's to it who it really is. That's the heart again. That's the heart of it again. It's the same thing. But to be spiritually minded is life and peace. That's a realm of faith that exists where? Beyond the appearances. Faith realm is invisible. It's neutral to the appearances. It doesn't affect the appearances and it doesn't care about the appearances. Now right away, people are going to run up to me, Mike, you're being irresponsible. You're being reckless. Well, I've been doing that pretty well for 56 years. So I'm going to try something different if you don't mind. Okay? I've been irresponsible and reckless for 56 years. And it hasn't helped me a bit. So I'd like out. Okay? And I'm really not too interested in what anybody thinks about it right now. Because I just tell the Father, I told him today, I said, I don't want to get up here and speak anything to anybody that I don't feel is alive within me. That I'm not feeling this welling within me, this river that's starting to produce a state of peace that's unchangeable by whatever I see or whatever comes to me. And if that sounds irresponsible to you, then you're under the law. You're still under a legal system. And it just doesn't work. So, here's another statement Jesus said. It's very, very beautiful. He was dealing with a man that had been 40 years in a state. Here we go again. Here's that number 40 again, right? And he said to him, thy sins be forgiven thee. And religious people all got bent out of shape, you remember? Well, who are you to say you've got power to forgive sins? Well, they didn't. They thought sins were bad behavior, remember? Pharisees, they had the 672 laws. And they just did them so they didn't break the Big Ten. It would just keep them away from the Big Ten, right? So they'd never get to the Big Ten, right? Then in the same story, he said, take up thy bed and walk. Now I'm going to tell you why they're synonymous statements. Thy sins be forgiven thee. Thy unbelief be forgiven thee. Thy unbelief be forgiven me. Now, take up your bed of unbelief that you've been laying in your whole life. That's what it's talking about. You've been laying in a bed of unbelief your whole life. And get up. Get up right now. And quit believing that you're not eternal. Quit believing you can die. If you can start talking to the Father within you about these things, I'm just telling you, it's a shortcut. It's a huge shortcut. So many things will begin to fall away if you focus in on these things. We watch the news. We watched the news the other night, and everybody wants to know where that damn plane's at. The whole world is looking for an airplane. Aren't we? Yeah, she was talking about it. I'd like to know where the damn thing went myself. Now they think it landed on some island. But we follow those things. Isn't it crazy? Where's that airplane at? Curious minds want to know. Inquiring minds want to know where that damn airplane is. I'm just telling you right now. Well, that's an easy one. We'll get over that one pretty quickly, won't we? When we find out. The real definition of sin is unbelief, and it has nothing to do with behavior. Nothing to do with it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And your own religious mind won't believe it for yourself, and it certainly won't believe it for your neighbor. And if you can't believe it for your neighbor, you're never going to believe it for yourself. But we certainly got a lot of problems that we talk about, don't we? And it's close to home. I mean, they lived right up the road, not even 600 feet. Now, here's another example, as we witness in one case, where while Jesus was preaching the word, the truth, out in the desert. Here we are, here's the desert again. Carol, what's going on with this desert stuff in 40? It's all over the place, isn't it? Yeah. 5,000 people followed him to hear the word. They followed him to hear the word. And all of a sudden, everyone realized they were in the desert without food. All of a sudden, they're in the desert. Oh my God, there's no food. And you know the story. Suddenly, the word they heard disappeared into 5,000 problems. As they so easily moved where? Back into unbelief again. Because why? They were absolutely convinced they were going to starve to death. Totally convinced. We're going to starve to death. And so what happened to the truth? Their unbelief stole it away. This is the devil. This is the demons that steal away your joy and your peace. Unbelief. That's all it is. That's it. Wow. Unbelief. Here it is again. This unbelief, Lanyon says, are things that form the idea of a false sense of life that you hold inside and that you use a little bit of life up here, a little bit of life up there, and you die because you do not know that life can only be eternal. You can do nothing to affect life. Life cannot be expunged. It can't be changed. It can't be altered in any way. You've never seen anybody prove it, though, because you've never seen an immortal. So you're afraid of it, Lanyon says, because you've never seen it. Never seen it happen. And you're never going to see it in this realm as long as you believe you're a man that can die. Kathy, read a little blurb. She said again, I'm going to remind you what she said. As man, we have had no confidence that we are eternal. And we have judged ourselves by our own unbelief. So it's our unbelief that steals away that which is eternal. We're saying the same thing again. What you need to do is go write a list of things that are troubling you and then look underneath them. Pull up the covers and try and say to yourself, what am I afraid of here? What am I not believing? What is it? I'm telling you right now, as sure as I'm standing here, he tells you. He will tell you from in here. And I can help you a little bit with some of mine. You know, I can tell you what's happened with me. And I'm just telling you, the only place I've found peace is when I let go of this unbelief that's causing fear in my life. And I walk into a lion's den quite a bit. And it challenges me every time I walk in. It comes against me. And so you end up in the cave, like the man who was named Legion, a cave of unbelief, tormented by thousands of things. When it talked about him cutting himself, that's just what you're doing to yourself, is you're tormenting yourself with all these areas of unbelief in your life. Thousands of them, legions of them. And we're going to hear a spiritual interpretation of that passage tomorrow, and you'll see the continuity there. It's so clear. It's beautiful when the Father puts these things together, and you see the continuity from verse to verse to verse. The same theme. It's just wonderful when it unfolds. It's beautiful. So here's something else that we've misunderstood. We say, what is the opposite of fear? Don't answer me. But we'll say it's peace. But I'm going to tell you, you say peace, peace, but there is no peace because the answer is not peace. The opposite of fear is not peace. Now, hang in there with me. The answer is a peace that passes all understanding. A peace that passes all understanding. It's not the word peace. It's not that things are going to go according to Hoyle for you tomorrow. It's a peace that passes all the understanding and unbelief that you carry around, like Lanyon says, in these little purses. Oh, God, when this one's gone, I'll be happy. This one's a little bigger and this one's a little easier. You know, it's all an illusion. It's all temporary. So you've been told you're created by God, period. After that, we've added everything to it. And we've been adding and adding to our own ignorance for generations until even what truth we have heard is being polluted with fear through our judgment of the appearances. So we're left, what? To earn a living by the sweat of our brow. And we'll live in fear because we don't realize, because we don't recognize that this thing called life within you is real. So you say, oh, am I going to be here with nothing to do then? We've been trying all our life to do something, haven't we? But we still live in fear of the whole world. Many things come to us. Lanyon said, if I took the air that's in this room and shut it up in little airtight containers, I would then have a picture of the world of unbelief as it shuts up life in little packages called health. And one person gets a large package and another one a small, but they all use it up and lay down and die. Because you keep holding on to it so tightly. Because we hold on to it so tightly and we think there's life in these little tiny victories that keep coming back. They keep coming back. Haven't you been living in this disease, poverty-stricken thing called hell long enough, Lanyon says? Or do you want some more of it? Bring it on, huh? I think I'll take a pass on that. So I want to close with parts of an email where Liz writes us about this exact thing and how it's working itself out in her life. It's so beautiful. And I'm going to close with that. So she says, after the January meetings, she had listened to two of the recordings. There was three. She was listening to them, and she says, dear Mike, my heart is filled with such deep gratitude from the revelations which continue to unfold through your recent meetings in January. I was going to wait until I listened to all the messages before sending you a note of appreciation, but the Spirit is always on time, and I just wanted to share with you the release that I've experienced. As you know, Robbie and I, and some of you don't know Liz, but Liz is Martha's daughter-in-law, married to her son Robbie. So as you know, Robbie and I are currently in Thailand, and I've been doing it tough in my mind. It's Australian for rough. I've been doing it tough in my mind with regards to the political tension and civil unrest activity which is currently at work over here. She turned on the world news too much, I guess, Carol. It's tough. Turn it on. We're all following an airplane around now. There have been a few other things which have ticked me off. And I've seen behavior appear from my flesh, which I have not seen in a very long time. Grr, she goes, grr.
It's so cute.
So, what happens? Yeah. One event comes, and I'm just telling you, this happened to me 2 weeks ago. I had event upon event upon event upon event happen, and I got so pissed off that I wore my vice president out, and he quit on me. He's worked with me for 8 years. It built and it built and it built. Where it started, here it started with this political tension and civil unrest in Thailand, right? So it builds a platform, doesn't it, of unbelief, and then little planes can come in and start landing. It's like you've got an airstrip. Here comes another one, and they're backed up, aren't they? It's what happened to her. It's what happened to me. Now, he came back. I talked him off the ledge, okay, thank God, because he's the encyclopedia of the business, we call him. If he leaves, I said, if you ever leave, I'm leaving. So, yeah. So I called him up and said, Justin, I'm going nuts. I said, I went insane. I said, help me, would you? I said, I'm really sorry. I don't know what happened to me. I lost my mind. Now, who lost their mind?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, he was out eating grass with the oxen. Who else lost their mind? The legion in the tomb. What did it say when he was all done? He was found in his right mind. Hello? I lost my mind, me, and I'm standing up here talking to you. That's the only credentials I got, is I'm confessing to you. I know the difference. I know the only thing I know is I know the difference. I'm not saying I don't struggle, but I know the difference now. Sometimes I stay there longer, sometimes it's shorter, but it still happens. So she says, I have this behavior I haven't seen in a long time, Gur. As a result, I have suffered mentally. Yep, that's right. No one else, just me. I don't have to explain it to you because I'm certain you know the terror the flesh can dish up. Well, that's because I confess it quite a bit when we're sharing. I'm sure you know it. Yes, I do, Liz. And I hope all of you can say the same thing. Because if you can say that, there's hope for you. Okay? There's hope for you. If you can't say that, I'm telling you, you're in trouble. I feel sorry for you. Because that means there's so much ignorance in your life, you don't realize you're being arrogant. Because when ignorance speaks, it becomes arrogance. I'm just telling you right now. I went to Justin, I said, Justin, I have no idea what I'm doing. Because that's how far I'd gotten off the track. I says, I had no idea why I was talking that way. You know, I was gathering a lynch mob to fire somebody. And I don't ever fire anybody. And I formed a lynch mob. This guy made a mistake and it cost us $5,000. So I guess I'm going to go out of business. You know, there it is again, right? You see what I'm saying? It's the same thing. It was the fear that I'm going to go out of business. Okay? And there's more than $5,000 in the checking account. I'll just let you know right now, okay? There's more than $5,000 in there, okay? So write a check, Nevins, and shut up. Just shut up, would you? Okay, all right. As a result, I've suffered mentally. Yep, that's right. No one else but me. Here we are on holiday with not much else to do. So I've been listening and reading to the Word and finding minimal peace, but the next day I'd be right back there again. What an unpleasant state to be in. Once again, your messages have been very timely. I have listened to two of them, and I'm so overwhelmed with gratitude for the many revelations which have brought me harmony and a feeling of I am at home with Thee. Isn't that beautiful? I am at home with Thee. And when I saw Him, I fell down as dead. That's when you become at home. When you fall down as dead and confess your unbelief. What are you judging? What people don't you like? What is it? Listen, I'm telling you, it's destroying you. It's killing you, and you live in a state of death. You do. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. That's not fun. She's telling us this isn't fun. And I'm telling you it's not fun. I am at home in Thee. I will not go on into one of the many truths which came forth because I'd be here all night, but there is revelation between the words which action has delivered me from the mind that was chasing after false images. It's not like I didn't want to be set free from the horrible feelings of the flesh, right? But now I know I was praying to the God of this world to deliver me from my thoughts. Thank you for reminding me that the enemy is within my own fleshly, carnal thoughts. Isn't that quite a confession? Isn't that beautiful? From a beautiful gal. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear about how much you know. What did Einstein say? How long does it take us to realize we don't know anything? You're never going to learn until you realize you don't know anything and you fall down as dead. That's why Jesus kept saying over and over and over again, I can do nothing of myself. He said it over and over. Don't even call me good. Don't do it. I don't want you to trip me up. Don't say I'm good. Thank you for reminding me that the enemy is within my own fleshly carnal thoughts. And she goes on to say some more beautiful stuff. Please know that I am with you as the Spirit moves to declog and defog my vision. I know the path is becoming clearer, especially now that I'm being made more aware of the great whore and the destruction it has caused. Now, I want to tell you what that is because we talked about it in January. But the great whore in the verse is called the fornicator. That fornicator is your own mind. That's all it is. Then she went on to explain how she was hearing it, which is different than I ever thought. That's why it's so beautiful. When she said she was hearing revelations in between the words, that was her own, which I want to hear that. Tell me what it is, see? So if you're hearing things different that are truth, please share them with us. I want, because it feeds me. Her email fed me and nurtured me and helped me with my problems. It really helps me. Every time I read it, it helps me to hear somebody else say it in their own tongue. The same truth in a different way. I love it. And she says, I know the path is becoming clearer, especially as you've made me aware of the great whore and the destruction it has caused. I'm somewhat aghast at the revealing of this, and still am, although that scripture has come up within a number of times over the last couple of years, but I wasn't brave enough to pursue it. This revelation sits so right with me. The challenge for me now is to be ever more alert. So what do we be alert to? We want to unearth. I'm going to share another testimony of hers tomorrow. The Spirit wants to unearth the unbelief that's holding you in bondage. It will be simpler than you think if you just ask. So thank you. Those of you that are watching, we'll be back with you tomorrow at 9 a.m. with the wonderful Gary Sigler. Gary's with her, so bye-bye.